ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Kirk Herbstreit and Matt Barry.
It is unbelievable that we have reached our Monday tradition unlike any other of Thanksgiving week in the final regular season of the ESPN College Football Podcast. Kirk Herbstreit, Matt Barry alongside. Before we get started, two things to get out of the way. First, watch NBA Today, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app, or listen to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. And the newest podcast, Swagoo and Perk, it's led by Marcus Spears, Swagoo, and Kendrick Perkins. New episode every Tuesday. The feedback on the show has been phenomenal so far. Check them out, Swagoo and Perk. Listen to wherever you get your podcasts. Their feedback is great. Herbie and Matt on Monday's feedback is otherworldly. And why wouldn't it be? It's college football, the greatest sport on the planet. Herbie, happy rivalry week. We're gonna look a little bit more into the games ahead because of what it represents. But as we do every Monday, Herb, let's travel around the conferences and talk about what we witnessed. And I want to start at the game you were at in the Big Ten, Ohio State, Michigan State. It was billed the game of the week. College Game Day was there, and all I saw was arguably the second most dominant team in the country in Ohio State.
Well, we think Ohio State just scored again. I mean, it was one of those kind of games. I mean, that's about as impressive of a start, you know, for a game that was supposed to be hyped up. I mean, it got to a point where it was almost like watching, it felt like it was a spring game, you know, like it was just at a practice. I mean, CJ Stroud looked as comfortable as he could look. It was like he was pregame warm-up, but it was the actual game itself. You know, the receivers were getting separation, getting open, and it was just – and a lot of those drives, by the way, you know, were 70, 80, 90-yard type of drives. You know, they just did it in four, five, six plays. But it was like watching Mike Tyson fight Michael Spinks, or it was just like all the buildup and the hype, and then it was just boom, 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 and you're like – well, we've got 2.5-3 hours to kill here.
It's all for a talk show. Yeah.
Yeah, this game's over. But yeah, impressive. CJ Stroud just continues to be more and more comfortable in that system. Those three receivers, I mean, you're running out of adjectives of great things that you can say about them. I mean, I remember when Chris Olave blocked a punt back in 18 against Michigan. Yep. And it was like, who's this young guy, this 17? Because, you know, they had Paris Campbell and Johnny Dixon and so many high-profile guys. And here's this young guy out of the receiver room that no one knew about. And then, of course, he's gone on to break the record of touchdowns, receptions at the school. And meanwhile, he's just ho-hum. He's just really, really kind of an introverted, shy, very thoughtful individual out of California who – it was an accident, you know, and how he ended up even getting a scholarship. And Ohio State was looking at his high school quarterback, and the quarterback just happened to ask him, hey, do you mind throwing for, you know, these coaches are coming, do you mind running routes for me? And he's like, sure. And Ryan Day got done with the workout, and he's like, by the way, who's that little receiver that was running these routes? So that's Chris Olave. He's like, oh, okay. Invited him to a camp, and the rest is history. It's pretty, pretty fascinating to think about. But yeah, all three of them are so good. Then you got Trevion Henderson. So yeah, we'll see. Ohio State still has a long way to go. You know, they got Michigan and Ann Arbor, and then potentially a Big Ten championship if they win that. But clearly controls their own destiny. But yeah, I mean, it was as good as you could hope for. What was it like watching that? I mean, how long did it take for you to say, okay, Michigan State maybe isn't that good, ranked number 7.
Yeah.
And Ohio State really is. It was kind of a combination of the two to me.
It was 21-0, and Joe and I were like, the ball game. Michigan State's got the worst pass defense in the Big Ten.
In the country.
It looked like 7-on-7.
Yeah.
And Joey and I were just sitting there laughing. And so we're like, all right, better find another noon game to get excited about because this one's over. I mean, it was a bunch of things. I'm glad you said what you just said, because I find it to be true, and people aren't going to want to hear the truth. We've seen now a couple of times this year where teams were ranked up. Iowa comes to mind at 2. Some of these other teams that were ranked high, and as this thing plays out, you start to get an idea of who these teams really are. I wouldn't put Michigan State inside the top 15. I just wouldn't. I saw all I needed to know. When Kenneth Walker's good, they're really good. Peyton Thorne, when he didn't have a running game, he's average at best, and the defense alone should put them outside the top 15. You can't take anything away from Ohio State, but all I saw, Kirk, was what an elite top 10 team is supposed to look like, and what a team, when you really parse through their resume, I mean, the Miami win was, how good does that look now? The Michigan win is still great, but I think Ohio State just proved that Michigan State's a long ways away from legitimately being one of those top 10 teams in the Big Ten.
Well, one last thing on this game, because I said before the game in a meeting at game day, I said, what Mel Tucker has done, everyone was talking about his contract and all that, the potential of him signing that. And I said, listen, this will be by far his least talented team that he'll have in East Lansing. I said, name a guy that would start if he were in Columbus. Name a guy. And Kenneth Walker, great back. I'll take Trevion Henderson. Name a guy. Like so at any position. So it tells you there's not one. So that tells you the fact that there's not three, there's not six, there's not one.
Right.
Unless you want to take Kenneth Walker. And again, I'm going to take Trevion Henderson. So for him to get to nine wins and two of those games against Indiana and Nebraska, they very easily could have lost, but they found a way. I mean, that says a lot about what they did, you know, because they are he knows he doesn't have the most talented team. He's trying to just kind of like manage this thing. And with the portal, you know, he said 34 guys last year. He'll sign 32 more this year. I mean, that's 66 guys in 2 years. You know, he's also moving people off the roster. So he's going to be fine, but it's just the reality of where they are right now. They deserve a lot of credit for getting to their nine wins. We'll see if they can beat Penn State, but they kind of got exposed. I mean, it was Ohio State clicking and Michigan State just they need players. He's got to go recruit. I mean, that's just kind of where Michigan State is. I real quick, because it wasn't a whole lot of huge games in the Big Ten.
No.
Wisconsin and Nebraska, I thought every game in Nebraska is a one possession game. I thought it'd be close, but we get more and more looks at this big back from Wisconsin, Braylon Allen. And I mean, everybody says, where does Wisconsin get him? By the way, Wisconsin's been recruiting running backs since like the late 80s, early 90s. Like it's not like Jonathan Taylor and now they have Braylon Allen. No. This goes way back. I mean, Barry Alvarez started a tradition of offensive linemen and running backs that goes back decades. So he's just the latest one. He's like 6'2", 238, as like a 17 or 18 year old. Yeah, so the job that everybody talks about coaches of the year, Paul Chryst, to me, I don't know how you can't recognize him as the Big Ten coach of the year. 1-3.
I'm with
you. And everyone's saying, what in the heck is wrong with Wisconsin, right? And all they've done is won seven in a row, and they've got Minnesota, Paul Bunyan's axe up in Minneapolis. Be a great game. I love those kind of games. I know it's not the playoff and all that, but I just love that kind of game. And, we'll see if they can finish it off, but that's been a remarkable story. He's had a lot to do with it. Obviously, and that defense, but just always want to recognize teams that don't give up, you know, despite not having maybe the season that they had hoped for. Purdue, by the way, has a chance if they beat Indiana to go 8-4. Purdue, you know, that's a hell of a year for Jeff Brohm if they're able to finish that off. Penn State plays Michigan State, also trying to get to 8-4. They've had a ton of injuries, it's been an interesting year in the Big Ten. It appears the winner of the Michigan Ohio State game this weekend will be headed into Indianapolis with a chance to play Wisconsin, more than likely if they win, and be a great matchup in Indy in a couple weeks.
And two things before we move on for the Big Ten. One, if I may, with Wisconsin and Chryst, and I thought you nailed it. You know what never happens at Wisconsin ever? At least they stopped this trend. Their coach is never rumored to be going somewhere. Never rumored to be flirting with anybody. And then you know what never happens after that? The administration overreacting and overpaying and getting into this whole coaching silly thing that's going on right now, which we'll get to. And that's what I love about the purity of a place like Iowa and a place like Wisconsin. They just coach ball. They're not flirting with.
They do. It's just so true.
Coach. Like yeah. Paul Chryst isn't going to be flirting with LSU. He has no interest. Just stay put and build a program. So that's why
they coach ball. They watch film.
That's
They wear heavy jackets, you know, in and out of practice, and they love drink a little bit of beer and having a few brats. You know, it's like you said, it's a simple life.
It's beautiful, and they keep producing winning football.
Yeah.
Before we move on from the Big Ten, because of your proximity to it, it's in your book. It's a remarkable thing in your book, but you are so close to the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry. To me, it's not even close. It's the best rivalry in all of sports. I know people say Auburn-Alabama. With all due respect to Auburn-Alabama, I love the Iron Bowl, but that's a state thing. This is a regional thing. Can you just take the listener inside the game and the week that leads up to the game?
Well, my son's on the team right now, and he's a freshman, and he's been sending me pictures. He's like, Dad, I grew up in our house, and I've always had an appreciation for this game. And he goes, one day into the week, and I already have a new appreciation. He said, you should see the facility in like the locker room and everything that's going on, the signs, the clocks, everywhere you look, it's something. His helmet on the scout team has been taped. Blue with the maize wings on the helmet. You know, it's a way of life in Columbus, you know, not just for the fans, but Urban Meyer and Jim Tressel took that rivalry and made it sacred. And it's always been sacred to every coach, you know, especially Woody Hayes, you know, when he was going head to head with Bo. And that's when I grew up in the middle of that 10-year war. And had such an appreciation for those uniforms getting on the same field together. And it seemed like in that era, it was back and forth and back and forth. And then when John Cooper was there, it was really one-sided and an advantage for Michigan. And they had some unbelievable talent that would go through Ann Arbor. And after John Cooper, Jim Tressel came in and he just found a way. He had the right formula, you know, and he didn't hide from the fact of how important that game was. The game itself, once you get through the hype and the noise, the game itself is the hardest hitting but cleanest game that you typically plan. And, you know, sometimes you play teams and you study film and you draw plays. And based on the coverage, you know, this guy's supposed to go here, but there's a bust and he didn't go there. And so you're kind of improvising because the guy that safety goes, that means that's safe, but he didn't do that. What happened? And that happens throughout most of the year. All of a sudden you get to the Michigan game and everything, the way it's supposed to go is exactly the way it goes. Like there's both schools are so well coached. That's what I mean when I say the cleanest as far as the reads, the people are where they're supposed to be. It's that kind of clean. It's nasty. Don't get me wrong, but that's what I mean when it's clean. And then the game itself, man, it's like you feel the tradition when you're playing. The stadium is electric. There's something about certain games. Like for me, USC, UCLA, I know it's not a game for today's generation, but for you and I, there's something about you see those uniforms on a field together. It just brings back memories for you. And that's how it is for Ohio State and Michigan. You know, you see Ohio State in this case come out with their white tops and their silver pants, and you just get this feeling of just wow, here they are on the road. Here comes Michigan. You know, they hit the banner. Yeah, fight song. Da, 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 da. And it's just like it's like here we go, man. And I grew up. My dad coached with Woody.
Yep.
He coached with Bo. Both were family friends. And my dad trained me to always cheer for Michigan, except one Saturday out of the year. And we're going to go kick the hell out of them, you know, for those 60 minutes. So for me, it can't get any better than 06 when it was number one against number two, or 2021 when.
Is that the Beanie Wells game, 06?
07 was Beanie Wells. 06 was Bo Schembechler died the day before. Yeah. It was like a shootout. Mike Hart had a big game, Teddy Ginn, Troy Smith. But this game, because it's not just Ohio State in the playoff, Michigan and Jim Harbaugh at home, despite he hadn't beaten Ohio State yet as a head coach, forget all that. It's right now. It's this year. Michigan wins. They're going to Indianapolis. They haven't been to Indianapolis yet since we've done this division thing. They've not been to play for the Big Ten championship. So they have so much at stake as well. And if they win against Ohio State, they go to the playoff potentially if they can beat Wisconsin. So this is why it's like you're sitting around playing gamble or your blackjack or something. You put all your chips in the middle of the table. And both teams are doing that. So that's what makes this rivalry so great, is when both teams are playing to get to a championship. That's the way this tradition was built on. And we're going to get a chance to see that on Saturday.
It's a bucket list thing for me. I've never been to the game. And as someone who covers the sport, it's like it just eats me alive that I've never had the
opportunity. You've got to do that.
I mean, it is just.
And I want to be with you when you get to go. Yeah.
I have such an affinity for that game without any connection to it because of the history of it. And when I said it on College Football Final, the fact that each team did their part this last weekend to get it to where it's for everything. I can't wait. It's going to be amazing.
It's going to be hype.
It's going to be there. Can't wait to watch that. Let's move over to the SEC now. Now I'm going to go on the field first, because that's what this podcast does. And then we can go off the field with the Dan Mullen news. But Alabama, this is by my count third or fourth time where they've had to play for four quarters. That sounds funny because you should be playing football for four quarters, but it's unexpected out of Alabama based on what we've seen out of Nick Saban's past. I want to give Sam Pittman and Arkansas a ton of credit because they fought him, like I said, for four quarters. But her is just another example, Herbie, of Alabama. There are ways to get them, and they're just not putting teams away like we thought they would.
Well, the secondary continues to be a concern. Communication, the back end, playmaking ability or lack thereof continues to be a concern. KJ Jefferson threw for 326, had some big plays. That's not what you'd expect. I mean, don't get me wrong. Treylon Burks is outstanding. He had a monster game. And running away from some of those defenders from Alabama. But I guarantee you, for Nick Saban, 42-35. And by the way, Bryce Young, record-setting day type of afternoon, 559 through the air, the five touchdowns, no interceptions. He and CJ Stroud just kind of continue to go to a different place as far as their production. So it's fun to see that. But Alabama's, even in this era of offensive football, they're still a prideful bunch on the other side.
Yep.
And to see them and consistently have weeks where they win games, but their defense lets them down. That's why it's hard to kind of be all in on Alabama. They are not a team that wants to outscore people, but kind of that's where they are against the better opponents. Who would have ever thought Arkansas is going to put 35 up, That's the most puzzling thing. This is a veteran defense, especially the back end. You looked at that secondary, and I remember saying in August, this will be one of Nick Saban's best defenses that he's had. Now, they've not really had, other than Will Anderson, they don't have difference makers, where they can just, we're Alabama, sorry, don't take this personally, and just dominate with defensive linemen. They don't have that except for Will. So I think they're a little bit vulnerable in the back end. But what frustrates, I think, Pete Golding is, and it's been going on, a team will go trips into the boundary, or they'll do an unusual formation. They'll motion a back out. There's kind of a feel to it.
Yeah.
Not everyone quite on the same page. And then someone's going tempo on you. Now it's happening fast. And I think they're really impact pre-snap movement is impacting this defense in a very negative way. And Georgia and Todd Monken, he's sitting there taking notes on, this format. Oh, okay. All right. So Alabama's going to see it in Atlanta. So it's like final exam time. They better get that aspect figured out, because Monken is taking notes from the Florida game all the way through. He's seeing little holes that he's going to try to take advantage of. So, and Georgia, I think, by the way, man, I feel like they're better than people want to give them credit. All you hear about is the Georgia defense for obvious reasons. But that offense with Bennett and those backs and the receivers getting better and the tight ends that they have, they are much more capable than I think people realize offensively.
Between Zamir White, they've got James Cook. He's a hell of a back. That Bowers kid, the tight end, you're right. Like, there's enough there. I say with Georgia, they're that team that they bleed you out slowly because they play physically on defense, and then they've got the running game. And Stetson Bennett's like, you know what? Keep underestimating me. Just go ahead. Because I've got an undefeated team. I got the number one team in the country, and I'm going to show up and play. They've got Georgia Tech rivalry week. That's going to be a laugher. And then it'll be the SEC championship. But maybe my favorite moment from Georgia all season was letting Jordan Davis score a touchdown. Was that not the most beautiful thing you've ever seen? That big human taking the ball from 1 yard out. Like, who's going to get in his way?
Nobody.
Throw that Nobody. In the playbook.
No, no. And I think he's up around 360, too, by the way. I mean, he is a man. And he's got twitch to go along with it. You know what I mean? But again, I just can't stand the SEC's games that they play at the end of the year. I'd rather have them have a bye week than play these games. There's no explanation that anybody can give me to tell me that it's a good thing for anybody, including the FCS opponents that they play. I know they get some money out of it, but these other conferences, they're grinding through, you know, late October into November. They're just like limping, trying to get to the finish line. And these SEC teams are like, you know, hey, we'll build this little bye weekend play. It's just not a good look, in my opinion.
I would agree. The three games this week, Charleston Southern, Prairie View, and Tennessee State for Georgia, Texas A&M, Mississippi State, respectively. The big news in college football in the SEC coming out yesterday afternoon that Florida had decided to part ways with their head coach, Dan Mullen. First 3 years there in Gainesville led the Gators to 3 New Year's Six bowls. Gotten a shootout last year in the SEC championship with Nick Saban in Alabama. Kyle Trask was his quarterback, made that a thing. Kyle Pitts, and here we are. He's not even getting out of year 4. I've said this, and I'll say it again. The fall of Dan Mullen at Florida, to me, is more shocking than the fall of Ed Orgeron at LSU. And I can't believe Florida is now looking for a head coach among some of the other jobs that are out there. This, to me, not that it happened with Stunning Kirk, the fact that it developed and then happened.
Yeah, I mean, they were 3-1 at the beginning of the year. They lost to Alabama where they fought back. I mean, they only lost by 2 points. And remember, that was the week everyone was like, is Alabama vulnerable or is Florida maybe pretty good? And then they come back the next week and blow Tennessee out 38-14. And you're like, all right, they've recalibrated. Look out, Georgia better look out for the boys in Gainesville. That's where we were at the end of September. And then it's a complete debacle. Only they know the real story. Only the players on that team and Dan Mullen know what happened. It's one thing to lose some ball games. It's another thing to lose it in the fashion in which they did. And it leaves everyone to speculate what's wrong. How did we get here? How did Scott Strickland have to make a move? You know, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And I feel always really uncomfortable because there's so much more to this story than we know. So it puts us in that position of speculating, which, you don't know if it's accurate or not. But I will say that when they played in their bowl game last year and 8 players decided not to play in a Sugar Bowl against Oklahoma, that would have been, if everybody played on both teams, that would have been as exciting of a bowl game as there maybe would be. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know that's the era we're in for some, but this is the Sugar Bowl. This is not the Blue Bonnet Bowl. This is the Sugar Bowl. And you have 8 players check out. That was where I think the cracks in the foundation started for me as I watched that program, because I've always marveled at Florida, and especially what Dan Mullen's been able to do. Like you mentioned, three straight New Year's Six bowl games. I mean, they're a big time powerhouse brand. And then they come back, you know, and deal with this season, and to see a team, you know, not play together. Once a team's, we've talked about this, goals are kind of like, nah, we can't make it. Oh, well, you just felt like they checked out. Mm-hmm. And whose fault is that? Evidently it's Dan Mullen's fault because he got fired. But you, if I'm Florida looking forward, you got to go find a guy that can cultivate a culture of winning. The swamp, if you're coming to play here, the swamp needs to mean something to you. Putting this jersey on needs to be a privilege for you to be able to put this uniform on. Playing in front of these fans, this is a privilege, not a stepping stone to get to the NFL. Again, have those goals. But while you're here, like Nick Saban, while you're in Tuscaloosa, we're winning SEC championships and hopefully national championships, and you're going to be a big part of that. But you're dialed in here. You're where your feet are. You're not thinking about what's going on with your agent or NIL or any of that crap. We're focused on winning. And that's where Florida needs to get. Florida needs to find a coach because you have resources, you have tradition, you can win, you can do whatever you want. But you got to get guys that want to play college football and want to be a winner. The game is still about winning. And if you don't have guys that are all in about having each other's back and loving each other, you're not going to win, no matter how talented individually you are. And I feel like that's where Florida's been.
NFL stuff will take care of itself. If you show up and play as one of 11 and as a teammate, you're going to look good. If your offensive line does its job, your quarterback's going to have time to throw to find you wide open. It all, what I'm having a hard time believing is happening right now, there's too much me. There's this disease of me culture right now. The me is going to work itself out if you're with the we. And it's just... It's driving me nuts how we're in this individualistic society. Well, I'm going to get mine. I'm going to go get my stuff.
But Matt, you know, we have done this to ourselves with these new rules. We are teaching a generation of athletes that your individual brand and your individual voice matters. Okay. So if that's what you're going to convey to a 16, 17, 18 year old kid who's a 5-star, 4-star, whatever, you feel like you've been focused on the individual. Unless you have a mentor, a high school coach, a parent, somebody that can kind of keep you focused on what really matters. At the end of the day, if you're recruiting, you've got to bring people in that are going to buy into your culture. That's on you as a coach. If you're going to sell your soul because this guy runs a 4.3, but he's kind of not our kind of guy, but you know what? I don't want him to go to Georgia. I don't want him to go to LSU. Let's bring him in. You do that too many times, program's done. So that never has there been more of a premium put on coaches than right now to bring in players we'll buy into. Like you and I, we follow this sport. There might be great individual players on teams that are 2-6. Do we talk about them? Mm-mm. No. They might get drafted, but do they get much attention? No. What happens is we go focus on Chris Olave or Jameson Williams or any of these guys that are on great teams. That's how game day goes, to where the great team matchups are, not right. The great one-on-one matchup between the right guard and the three technique. Oh, they're both going to be first rounders. Yeah, their teams suck, but who cares? Mel loves these two guys. Let's go take game day to that game. Yeah, but they're 3-7 against 2-8. Who cares? We don't do that. We go to where it's 9-0 against 9-0 or 8-1 against 9-0. It's still a team game. And that's the challenge. How do you create team in a world that's being celebrated on social media and all the noise you hear around the sport? Individual, individual, individual. And then you got to go to a college and buy into team. It's kind of an oxymoron right now for this generation. So you better find a coach that knows kind of the balancing act between, yeah, it's great, individual brand. Yeah, good for you. Yeah, go to the NFL. Yeah, good, good. In the meantime, this is what you're going to do while you're here.
So let's, right.
Yeah, this is what's on the front burner. All that stuff's on the back burner for now.
And a guy that comes to mind, we're not going to get into candidates and whatnot because it's so speculative, but a guy that comes to mind that I think would bring that, who gets passed over all the time, Mark Stoops.
Yeah.
You talked about a guy. Mark Stoops could be a guy to do that, but he may not.
Stoops would be great. He'd be great. What he's done in Lexington in 9 years, you imagine if he had the personnel and the players to work with and what they have in Gainesville or Baton Rouge. I hope somebody gives him a look. He would do incredibly well.
He strikes me as an OBS kind of guy, which is what some of these programs need. And as you were saying that, the one clip that keeps coming to mind is Bo Schembechler, the team. I would play that. I might put that on social media and just play it every day this week, just because I'm so tired of all this garbage.
I'm with you, man. By the way, Shane Beamer. Congratulations, Shane.
There's a guy. Yeah. This is a true story. I was in studio because that game was the 7 p.m. game on ESPN, and I'm doing the cut-ins and the halftime. When I looked down at the score bug and saw that South Carolina got 5 wins, I had to look around the studio, and I asked everybody, I was like, who else knew South Carolina had 5 wins and they're about to be bowl eligible?
Yeah.
That is the quietest 6 wins in the country.
Yes. Yeah. And I love the genuine emotions from him post-game. And how proud he was of his team, down 14-0 to Auburn. By the way, poor Brian Harsin.
I know.
He gets these leads against Mississippi State and South Carolina, and they can't finish. You know, they were up 14. They were up huge on Mississippi State and could very easily be sitting there at 8 or 9 wins. And instead, they're 6-5 going into the Iron Bowl. Also, Tennessee, Josh Heupel. I know it was South Alabama. But the point is, how many people, raise your hand, how many people had Josh Heupel getting to 6, more likely 7 wins and going to a bowl game in his first year? After everything, the transfer portal, it was a one-way street out of Knoxville. And this dude goes in there with a new AD and Danny White out of UCF. And these boys are, they're creating a little bit of buzz, man, with that offense. Hendon Hooker scoring on a lot of people, including Alabama. They've become a fun team to watch, and they're going to recruit very well. Tennessee is a stock that's doing this. They're going up. You're going to want to buy that stock. Good for hype, getting his team to a bowl game as well.
I know that Kirby Smart's going to get it because he's got 5 stars everywhere, but I'd cast a vote for Beamer and Heupel to share SEC Coach of the Year. Over the Big 12, there isn't a team that is uglier in their dominance than Oklahoma State. They are the ugliest team, but boy, do they show up and play football. Was in studio with Galloway, and he's like, man, Oklahoma State's unwatchable. I was like, it was 6-0.
Joey, come on, man.
It was 6-0. He's like, they're boring. And I was like, watch. I was like, I'm telling you, you're going to look at the TV in about 45 minutes, it's going to be 13-0. You're going to look back again, and it's going to be 23-0 because they play defense. Spencer Sanders does just enough, and they are the one team in this whole playoff conversation. They've clinched a spot in the Big 12 championship. They could have 2 more top 10 wins under their belt. If they get that, Kirk, they're in the college football playoff. They are the ugliest dominant team I've seen in a while, and it's a pleasure to watch.
It is. They yuck it up a little bit and then win the game. But that's what you do when you have defense, you know, and they can run the football enough to be able to. I think they play complementary offensive football with Sanders and just hope that he has a game where he's not turning it over. When he doesn't turn the football over and that defense is going to play the way they play every week, they're going to be a tough out.
Yeah.
You know? And they've got enough skill. You know, Tay Martin gives them something on the edge. I like this John Paul Richardson as well. So they've got skill. I just love how Mike Gundy is a chameleon. You know, he has changed his identity as a team over the last, I don't know, how long has he been there now? 10 or 15 years, whatever.
Oh, he's been there since 2004, maybe.
But I just love how you want to put him in a box and say, he's an air raid guy. And then it's like, nah, he's not an air raid guy. They're running the football. Then they're option football, you know, and then they're spread again. And then they go back to being like a dual threat quarterback. Now they have a drop back. And he adjusts as well as anybody to what he has to work with. I just love him. He's a fascinating guy to sit down and talk with, too. I'm looking forward. I have their game this week against OU. Bedlam will be a fun one.
Love it.
But yeah, their defense has been great. Jim Knowles came over from Duke a few years ago and implemented a scheme where they've got a lot of speed on the field. You know, a lot of times they're out there with five or six DBs, blitzing their backers and got good pressure on the edge. They're just real sound, but complicated at the same time for offenses. So it'd be a good matchup, you know, but you're right about this past weekend. I can hear Joey, by the way, saying that, but all you know is they just keep winning and you make a great point. We'll see what happens Tuesday night, but with Oklahoma coming up, potentially if they win against Oklahoma, there's a really good shot. Baylor, yep. If Baylor wins, the Baylor could end up being in the Big 12 championship game. So a couple potential impressive opportunities for them to kind of show the committee. And now that the Pac-12 is out, the ACC is out. We know about the Big 10 winner if they get by Wisconsin being in. We know about Georgia getting in. Even if Alabama upsets Georgia and Alabama and Georgia both go in, and you have Ohio State or Michigan that would potentially go in, that would leave a debate if Oklahoma State were to win out, a debate between Oklahoma State and Cincinnati. That's with an Alabama upset of
yes.
Georgia.
Yes.
If Georgia wins and Oklahoma State takes care of business, you know, there's a very, very strong possibility that then the debate ends up being Georgia would be in either Michigan and Ohio State. You'd have Cincinnati if they finish off and win. I think they would be in. And then it becomes a Notre Dame,
yep.
Oklahoma State, Big 12 champ discussion. And you would think that based on the resume with all those impressive wins and a conference championship, I really think Oklahoma State would get the nod over Notre Dame.
Yep. And they are the one problem with that. They're the one team that the committee is keeping an eye on. Like they could really screw everything up. And Notre Dame's at 55-0 against Georgia Tech. Mm-hmm. That's the largest shutout win in 25 years. If not for the loss to Cincinnati, Notre Dame's in the conversation. They're playing really good football at the right time. So there's just enough out there to screw with people in the final couple of weeks of the season. You'd mentioned the Pac-12 being out of it. That's because Utah, another remarkable story. I had Kyle Whittingham on SportsCenter with me last week. And just to hear him speak about everything this team's gone through and the death of two teammates and starting with adversity. And I have more respect for Kyle Whittingham, who, by the way, turned 62 this week and would still probably whoop anyone's ass he came across.
62, but he's playing 45.
I'm telling you, 62 is his new 40, man. That guy. But we do this all the time because you and I are, this is how we're cut in the college football cloth. Teams with identity. There isn't a team with more of an identity than Utah and who they are. They're in the Pac-12 championship game. What a job that he's done with this team this year.
Yeah, that you've pretty much just said it all. Utah is not just this year, but he's been there for a long time. Players have come and gone. And Utah, as you say, you close your eyes and you think of Utah and you know what you're going to get. And, you know, they started off a little bit slow this year and looked like, OK, they're not going to necessarily be a factor in the Pac-12. They were 1-2 off of losses to BYU and San Diego State. Right. Then they make the switch at quarterback and put Cameron Rising in. And I think they found themselves where they needed to be on that side. And then they just kept getting better and better on the defensive side, got healthy and became confident. You know, they even with the loss up in Corvallis, they still, I think, were a confident football team. And, you know, they've won four in a row. The win against UCLA was big to kind of springboard, I think, a team that's really dangerous. I didn't expect them to dominate Oregon at the line of scrimmage the way they did. That was really a mismatch. That was like one team looks like they've been lifting and eating iron. And the other team looked like they just, I don't know. They just, and Oregon prides itself on physicality. I mean, that's what he's all about. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was the game got away from them or the tough atmosphere. You know, these two teams potentially play again in a couple of weeks in Las Vegas with the winner going to the Rose Bowl. So Oregon could avenge this embarrassment, but that was a shocker to me. That really surprised me. Great for Utah, but I was very surprised and really disappointed in not seeing Oregon compete more, especially at the line of scrimmage.
And so now the Pac-12 out of the college football playoff again with job openings at Washington, Washington State at USC. This is a huge offseason for this league. Because again, I mean, I don't think they've been in the playoffs since, what, 14 with Washington or 15 with Washington. And
wow,
it's, you know, for a conference that I grew up loving with some of the best football, it's sad to see where it's gone.
Man, all these coaches, by the way, like a sidebar, all these coaches openings, these jobs.
There's 14 and three have already been filled.
But what's going to happen and what people aren't talking about is, you know, Billy Napier is going to go somewhere.
Yes.
So another job's going to open, right? You know, Luke Fickell might go somewhere. Brian Kelly. I mean, so you're talking about not just, you know, you might see a couple NFL coordinators come down and become college coaches. I bet you'll see that a couple of those. But where are these coaches going to come from? You know, how many coaches are willing to give an offensive coordinator or defense coordinator in a college game a chance to become the guy? Right. We might see one or two of those, but I think most of these are going to be established coaches that are going to come from somewhere from college, leave their job, go to take that job. So it's just, you're going to see assistant coaches and head coaches. It's going to be about 3 or 4 weeks of absolute chaos, and big jobs could open up because, like, if Brian Kelly takes the USC job,
Notre Dame,
all of a sudden Notre Dame's open.
The domino effect sometimes is bigger. Let's just, yeah, for the sake of this conversation, let's just throw James Franklin somewhere. Penn State's open.
Now Penn State would be open. Yeah.
Let's say Luke Fickell then goes to Penn State. Well, now, yeah, Cincinnati, a playoff team, is open.
That's what I'm saying. So it's just,
I don't even know if there's enough coaches. Like, that's where are the coaches saying, coming, dude, from?
That's what I'm saying. It's like, what an interesting profession. Like, you're out there, you know, you're in a film room, you're coaching. I mean, they don't know what's going on outside of their film room. You know, all of a sudden they're just grinding. All of a sudden they get a call from their agent. Something that's like, where are we going? You know, call their wife. Hey, I guess, you're in charge of the house, so we got to pack everything up. We're out of here.
Yeah, hit up Zillow. We got to find a place in Baton Rouge because, yeah,
it's going to be, I'm telling you, I don't know if we've ever had a year like we're about to have. Like, this is going to be crazy. And there's going to be some big names that are going to be leaving some high profile places to go to. So to go to some of these openings, and then who is going to go to those?
Yeah. Who takes over Ole Miss if Lane leaves? Like, they've got them going to be a 10 winning team. I think it sucks for the sport. I'm one of those. I hate it. We can do a whole coaching. You know what? Here's what we'll do. Our schedules are ridiculous anyway, but when this coaching circus hits its zenith, you and I, no matter what we're doing, we're going to hop on here and we're just going to play connect the dots, and it's going to be entertaining.
Well, dude, just so everybody knows how this works, all these athletic directors, and think about USC, they've been sitting on the on deck circle for like 8 weeks. You know, there was a reason they moved early so they could be first in line. Well, now the rubber's about to meet the road. Now they've got all of a sudden LSU and Florida and Washington and TCU got all these people now that are in. And it's like, wait a second. Like, so they're trying to talk to agents, but nobody can take a job or talk about it when they're in the middle of their season.
Right.
So what's going to happen is the second these teams play their final game, it's just going to be like boom, boom, boom.
A bunch of piranhas, like, in a cage.
Yeah. But I'm going to say it's going to be like an announcement, like at 11 o'clock Saturday night, you know, so-and-so took this job. So, whoa, when did that happen? Or you wake up Sunday and it's like there's two or three jobs that have been filled. It's going to happen like that. Cause the only reason you haven't seen these jobs, it's not that they're taking their time. Look at all these good No, they're doing it the politically correct way out of respect for the profession. They're waiting until they're done with their current job. That's why these NFL coordinators are so hard to attract or because you're giving up your early signing period. When's the NFL season go? Into early January?
Yeah. I mean,
whatever it is. So you have to wait until they're done. And then you can hire him. So, but in the meantime, these college coaches, many of them finished their season, you know, this week, and you're going to see some stuff start to bubble up Saturday night, Saturday late afternoon, Saturday night, Sunday. It's going to be like boom, 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 boom.
Oh, it's going to be fun. Also fun. The segment of this podcast we love. Time for this week's edition of Why We Love the Sport.
That's why we love the sport.
The reason I love the sport this weekend.
This is why I love this sport.
Lead us off, Herb. Why you love the sport?
I think I got to single out Shane Beamer in South Carolina. You know, this was a team that you said probably the quietest bowl eligible team in the country. But I just think what he inherited there. You know, this is a team in a very, very tough and challenging conference. Tough to try to get things going in the right direction. And for the season to kind of go through some really tough times. I was texting with Shane earlier and I was like, you know, it's not just that you're bowl eligible. That's great. But it's how you got there. You know, you're trying to change a culture and you get to your sixth win and you beat Auburn, and that's great. If you just looked at the box score, or you looked at the highlights. But the reason I think he got emotional after that game was because they were down by 14 early in that game. And for a guy that's trying to preach to his team about, you know, fight and never giving up and always believe we can find a way as a team to come back. You preach all that stuff. You do drill works and winter conditioning and spring and all these things, all about trying to create a backbone on a football team. And your first year to be sitting there where you're just trying to get, you know, reality is they got Clemson. It's going to be hard to win that game. This is a game that they needed. And they're down 14 and they didn't give up and they fought back and they ended up winning at 21-17. This is off of a loss to Missouri the week before. And so I don't know. I just love little stories like that, that are a huge deal in Columbia, South Carolina. And with his dad there, just a special moment, his kids coming out after the post game, he's crying, you know, that, you know, where else are you going to see that kind of stuff? You know, with Frank Beamer, who's a Hall of Fame coach, he's crying. Shane's crying. He's holding his son in his arms. I mean, I'm crying watching because I love the Beamer family. So, yeah, that and that's because they got to their sixth win. Dude, they're 6-5.
No clue how.
They didn't clinch the East, and they're headed to Atlanta. Got this. They're 6-5. But showing how proud he was of that team, of again, fighting back from being down 14 to win that game. I just love – that's another example of why I love college football.
So well done. And I don't know if you're a Ted Lasso guy, but it's very Ted Lasso. It's believe.
Yeah.
Believe the ability to believe is a strong power. You don't have to have Johnny Five Star, but if you got Five Star belief, which is what Beamer's trying to do, I think it's remarkable.
Yep.
The reason I love the sport this week, it is this week. It is rivalry week. There is one thing that makes college football stand up above the rest. It's Ohio State, Michigan. It's every rivalry. It's the Egg Bowl on Thursday night. It's the Iron Bowl this weekend. Mm. This is what makes the sport so unique. In my neck of the woods, Arizona State. Arizona is trying to build something. Arizona State's fallen short of expectations. But you know what washes all of that away? One win a year against your rival. And that's what makes this sport so beautiful. It all comes down to this. There are people on social media that have the amount of days it was since the last time Michigan beat Ohio State. What other sport does that exist? It's the holiday weekend. You're with your family. Sometimes it's a mixed family from your rival. And the hate that comes along with this week, it gives me chills talking about it. I love the sport because I love college football rivalry week. It's the best.
Awesome. Good one. Love that.
I mean, it's the best.
Now you got me all fired up. You're right, man. I know a lot of people watch NFL I'll watch some NFL, but as soon as that Egg Bowl comes on, click. I called that Egg Bowl with Lee Corso and Mike Tirico for probably a decade. And I I love that game. Not to mention the way Will Rogers is playing and the way Matt Corral and Ole Miss trying to get to a New Year's Six bowl game. I think they're underdogs this week. But anyway, that's a great way to end this, because you're right. It's a great reminder of where we are this week and how, forget the playoff rankings and all that. There'll be plenty of time for that. Just enjoy these games, because the rivalries still matter. They still resonate.
Think about it. Washington's playing for, like, they've had a disappointed season. Washington State, they're both without coaches. You get this one win, the Apple Cup sets the table for the rest of the season. So I love rivalry week. I love Thanksgiving week. Herb, always, I love doing this with you. It's been so much fun. We got a couple left before we get into the playoff stretch. So enjoy the Thanksgiving, enjoy the holiday, enjoy the rivalries. And you're going to need it, Kirk, sometime this week. Just whip out that Theragun behind you. Give yourself a little Theragun rub down therapy. You'll be ready to go.
I will. I need that daily.
Oh, man. Everybody have a good Thanksgiving. We'll catch you next week on the ESPN College Football Podcast.